Welcome to Discovering and Sharing Shuswap History. Hello, my name is Ellie McGaughey, and I'm going to be reading to you stories and tidbits from the collection of local historian Dave Harper. He's been involved in local history for some 30 years now through the Salmon Arm Museum. Over the years, he's collected stories of Salmon Arm's origins and the people who settled here, both native and early pioneers. His interest here is in the individual stories of discovering a new land and how the landscape and geographical setting helped create a thriving, vibrant community. Some of our readings will be long as they are memoirs of particular families, and yet there will be short little vignettes gathered from the pages of local newspapers, the Salmon Arm Observer, the Enderby Commoner, and the Inland Sentinel from Kamloops. So sit back and enjoy as we share an early history of the people who lived here. Appleman's Alphabet. An apple tree's an article attractive, all agree, bearing bunches big of blossoms, bringing business to the bee. Careful be to kill the cutworm, or he'll commandeer the crop. Don't delay to spray diseases, or the apples dead will drop. Employ exhaustive effort every evil to erase, for furthering fruit scents, furnish fungicides and sprays. Garrett the greedy gopher, ere he gnaws the growing root, he who heeds the horticultural hints shall harvest heaps of fruit. Identify each insect and insecticides inflict. Judicious joy is justified when juicy fruit is picked. Keep kerosene emulsion mixed to kill some kinds of scales. Let lime and sulfur loose on lice, or lichens lie prevails. Mismanagement means money lost, more method money made. Neglect no necessary need, nor nip nutrition's aid. Own order in your orchard, all obstructions oversee. Prudent perennial pruning promotes prosperity. Quantum stuff of quassia will the aphids quickly quell. Renew reticulation, roguish rabbits, to repel. Sure seasonable spraying shall substantiate success. Tough with tobacco juice, the trees were thriving, thripes transgress. Use uttermost utility, unfruitfulness undue, veto the various vermin and verdant vistas view. Watch well for woolly aphis and wage war on webworms too. Xylophagus, the borers, twin the tree's exanthus hue. Yearn for a larger yearly yield, and mark this point as true. Zeal and zeal only wins the fight in orcharding for you. Truthful James, Notch Hill, July 1911. Apples. Apples hold the same place among fruit that wheat holds among grains. The staple food fruit and the staple food grain have this in common, that the farther north they can be successfully grown, the better the quality. This fact largely accounts for the superiority of Canadian wheat and apples. The fact that Salmon Arm is the most northerly district in BC that has made a specialty of apple culture may have an intimate connection with the other fact that the Salmon Arm fruit exhibit at New Westminster took the first prize in competition with all parts of the province. Still, it must be remembered that men, as well as soil and climate, are a factor in the raising of good apples. The ranchers of Salmon Arm are keeping the public from forgetting that Shuswap Lake fruit is good fruit. This is from Chase Tribune, October 1912. To fruit tree planters, I have for fall and spring planting all the leading varieties on 2 and 3 year roots, at 20C for 4 to 6 foot trees in lots of 10 or over of one variety. Smaller trees at 17.5C and 15C. Also, plums, pears, cherries, peaches, grapes, and etc. On the WX Ranch, you will find this stock bearing earlier and doing better in every way than that propagated outside the district. Large or small orders will have equally careful attention. If not convenient for you to come and choose your trees, kindly favor me with a letter stating your wants. We'll be pleased to have you visit the nursery whether you want trees or not. This, yours truly, W.J. Wilcox. I can remember seeing a string of teams with wagons loaded with apples, ready to unload, just waiting their turn. There would be teams as far as one could see, one team behind the other with wagons loaded with apples. There were thousands of boxes of apples, thousands and thousands. Mr. Neil Campbell. Fruit was marketed wherever a customer could be found. Small orders were welcomed and honored immediately, and carload lots went to merchants and jobbers on the prairies and also to London, England. The apples were sorted, graded, and the fancy, extra fancy, and C-grade were individually wrapped and the boxes were lidded. A trained packer was a priceless asset and speed was a necessity. This by Ruth Wilcox Raven. Russell Cameron was an early pioneer of salmon arm, and he loved to tell a good story. This one took place about 1907. There is a lot of history about Sam McGuire. One day, this man came into Sam's store. They were playing poker, gambling in the store. This man came in, and Sam got up to wait on him, and he said, "What do you want?" The man said, "Give me a sack of sugar." Now, in those days, a sack was 100 pounds. It didn't come in 5-pound bags or 2-pound bags. Sam threw it on the counter, and this guy threw it on his back and out the door. When he got out the door, Sam said, "Who was that guy who was in here and got the sugar? I never saw him before." So the next bill we got from the groceries, the sack of sugar was on everybody's bill. A packing school conducted by an expert in the employ of the provincial government will be held commencing Monday, January 12, 1914. This class is particularly important from the fact that lessons will be given in the American box, which is altogether different dimensions from the Canadian box that we have been using in the past. It has been decided that we will fight the American competition in the prairie markets with their own weapons, and that is a smaller box of apples than we have been selling. There is no doubt all apple growers and owners of young orchards will be interested in taking the packing lessons in the new box. Girls who take up fruit packing can earn from $50 to $75 per month during the busy season. This was from the Observer, January 8, 1914. Prizes for salmon arm fruit. Salmon arm fruit goes to England. Salmon arm figures largely in the fruit exhibit sent to England by the provincial government for the exhibition and advertisement purposes at the Royal Horticultural Society's Colonial Show in London. 30 boxes of fruit went from here, supplied by the Farmers' Exchange, as well as at the London Show. The fruit will be entered for competition at various county shows in both England and Scotland. It is also proposed to give lectures on British Columbia at various points, with the view of encouraging immigration to this province. This was from the Observer, October 28, 1907. For the first time since British Columbia commenced showing her banner apples at the great exhibitions of the old country, The display from this province was received gold medals at every show. A box of salmon arm apples was presented to the king, who made a gracefully worded acknowledgement. This from the Observer, January 15, 1914. A bouquet. It is gratifying to note that Salmon Arm, one of the most fertile sections of the Thompson Valley, has won honor and many prizes at the National Apple Show just ended in Vancouver. The fruit growers of that district were not slow to discern the advantages that follow any successes they might achieve, and several of them spared neither time nor money nor effort to win. That they did so is highly credible to them, and they deserve praise from every member of the municipality for what they have done to bring Salmon Arm into prominence. Not only have the exhibitors won prizes, that this is the least of the benefits which will result from the show, but they have advertised to the world, proving it by demonstration that Salmon Arm is one of the premier apple-growing sections on the continent. Salmon Arm fruit is now assured of a ready market and good prices. This was from the Inland Sentinel. The date is unknown. To Salmon Arm belongs the distinction of having the largest exhibit in the Agricultural Hall at the Provincial Exhibition, consisting of fruits and vegetables of every variety. This favored inland district has even sent tobacco raised there and honey in the hive. Butter and eggs are also included in the exhibit, and to prove they are not vegetarians, some fine slabs of home-cured bacon were set forth on the counters. A 91.5-pound Tours mammoth squash stands prominently among the vegetables. This district has entered a general exhibit including fruit and has also entered a splendid fruit exhibit. In the general showing are pumpkins, squash, turnips, carrots, onions, citrons, cabbage, cauliflower, mangoes, and also watermelon and muskmelon. 15 boxes of different varieties of apples divide the vegetables from the fruit section. Altogether, there are 100 different varieties of apples and 10 different varieties of grapes. Of the apples, 32 varieties are in boxes and the balance on plates. Arranged around the top are jars of the earlier fruits in acid. There are also 39 varieties of plums and prunes and some good specimens of apricots, cherries, and peaches. Mr. F. D. Nicholson, organizer of the Salmon Arm exhibit at the Provincial Exhibition, named a few of the apple varieties that received prizes for Salmon Arm growers at the exhibition. The list is follows: Northern Spy, Wealthy, Ribston Pippin, Alexander, Johathan, Kings, Ontario, Gravenstein, Snow, Cox Orange, Grimes Golden, Wolf River, Maiden's Blush, Atkin Red, Canada Red, Limber Twig, Waxman, Tolman, Sweet Weismer, Dessert, White Winter Pearmain, New York Wine, Wallbridge Wagoner, Stark, Winter Banana, Greening, Rome Beauty, and Yellow Bellflower. This was from The Observer, October 10, 1912. Our fruit growers are looking happy. They're showing at Kamloops, carrying off many of the prizes. They made a splendid district exhibit at New Westminster. Salmon Arm fruit was one of the main attractions there, so much so that the Hudson's Bay Company of Vancouver took the whole exhibit to place in their large windows. Every Armite may feel proud of their first district exhibit. This was from the Ethnograph, October 12, 1904. Driving around Salmon Arm today, we see the remnants of the orchards that dominated the landscape 90 years ago. The apple was king in Salmon Arm, and everyone that had a few square feet to spare in the yard planted a few trees. The first apple trees were ordered from Minnesota in 1890 and were planted by C.B. Harris and J.D. McGuire on land owned by G.E. Radcliffe. This would be on the bench above the present Shoe Swap Bakery near the Credit Union. The varieties planted were Yellow Transparents, Wealthies, Golden Russets, Alexanders, Ben Davis, and Bellflowers. In the peak year of 1946, Salmon Arm shipped over 500,000 boxes of apples to the rest of Canada and the world. Norman Bowden had an orchard on Rotten Row in early Salmon Arm. In case you're wondering, Rotten Row was named after a horse path in Hyde Park in London, England. This is an excerpt from Norman's reminiscences. Peter Parson was known as the town drunk. I remember once when Pete came staggering along. He had been drinking all day in McGuire's orchard. There was a fence along the street, and all he had to do was to get over the fence, and the Montebello Hotel was right near. He was having a lovely time. He got to the new telephone pole. It was just being erected, and he sank on his knees, put his arms around the pole, pulling his pruning shears out of his back pocket, and started to prune the telephone pole. Fruit handling and shipping. From the very early days of the fruit industry until about 1900, the handling and shipping of fruit was rather haphazard. Any wooden container available was used, soap and powder boxes, even nail kegs. Eventually, though, the standard apple box, as used in the state of Washington, was adopted. Sales were readily found in Kamloops, Revelstoke, and the many mining camps and towns in B.C. Before long, they went all over the world. Mr. Ron Turner.
A pioneer orchardist died on December 9th. Salmon Arm's Ronald Turner was the son of Maud and Robert Turner. That family name helped put Salmon Arm on the map for the Turner red apple during our region's heyday of apple growing. In this next piece, we revisit Ronnie Turner's orchard. The story was recorded last November. It originally aired on CBC Radio. Ronnie Turner was 100 years old when he died last week.
Hundreds of cars drive east and west on the Trans-Canada Highway, passing this Salmon Arm landmark totally unaware. These 2 acres are all that remain of the 100-year-old orchard. And at 98, Ronald Turner is packing it in. He remembers when the Turner apples were his family's source of income and source of pride.
There's one particular tree turned out to be all red. In the Saturday Evening Post, they're advertising a red delicious. Now, Dad thought, well, we got a red delicious here just as good as that. And it became known as the Turner Red Delicious. It became quite famous.
In the day, apples put Salmon Arm on the map. Thousands of pounds of apples were shipped around the world each fall, many from the Turner's 70 acres. But it's only a memory now. It took one winter in the middle of last century to change everything.
Now, we had one cold winter in 1949-1950. It was the coldest winter we've ever experienced in Salmon Arm. It killed about more than, about two-thirds of the apple trees. You might say it put the end of the apples in Salmon Arm.
It wasn't just the 8 weeks of frosty weather that forced changes.
Other varieties gradually took over from the delicious, and now it's almost a thing of the past. The few orchards are left in Salmon Arm, Hannah's in particular, I don't think any of the original varieties we used to grow in their orchard at all new varieties. Go into any store now, you can buy fruit from all over the world, you know. It was inevitable, I think.
Change is what Ronald Turner accepts as inevitable. He also accepts that he's just too old to keep up the maintenance on his remaining acres. So, this November, he cut down all but one tree. His daughter Janice accepts the changes too, but she's keeping a close eye on her dad.
That's the reason that he gets up every morning, because he has a purpose, and that's why he's walking around like he is at 98 years old and looking after himself.
And Janice remembers a good life growing up before so much change.
Up above on the top hill was where the famous Turner Red Delicious were grown, and that's what I remember more than anything, because we were up there. And as a kid, I'd go to school in the morning in the fall and grab one of these great big juicy red delicious apples, and that would be my meal for the day.
Where do you get your apples from now?
Well, up until 4 weeks ago, we'd get them from Dad's, because that's when they were taken down, of course, and I don't know where I'll get them from now.
There's still apples grown in Salmon Arm, but not like they used to be.
An orchard here. Oh, here too.
We walk slowly past the stumps and piled branches.
Most practically all that.
One tree remains.
Yeah. It's too much for me. Now we're coming to the one of the original trees, the orchard, right here. That's a wealthy. Well, I'm 98 now, and this tree has been here as long as I can remember.
The wealthy apple is also part of the bygone era. Newer varieties, better keepers, are grown now.
Just the numbers of people arriving in Salmon Arm. Maybe we're getting away from the homegrown, so to speak, in order to provide that supply. Yes, I'm going to miss the apple trees. You bet.
Yeah, it's a good apple. Oh, a lot of people like it. I'll have to get busy. I will prune it a bit. You see, there's pruning. That'll have to come out, all this thing. I think we did produce a little better apple than most growers. The simple reason we took more interest in it, better care.
It's a very important part of the Salmon Arm history, and I think that it's one that a part of the history that we don't want to forget.
Oh, but look at these.
Yeah.
They're beautiful.
For CBC Radio in Salmon Arm, I'm Leah Shaw.
You can't stop progress, no matter what you think.
Sit down on the farm, back among the family, away from the tyranny. Singing to their men, dancing in heel and toe, and watching the apples grow. Sit down on the farm, back among the family, away from a tyranny. Hear the ladies singing to their men, dancing in heel and toe, and watching the apples grow.
For more information on these and other stories, please contact the Salmon Arm Museum at Haney Heritage Park, or visit us when we are open during the summer season.
You are listening to Discovering and Sharing Shuswap History.
In light of the recently passed tree bylaw, there are several examples of heritage trees in the district that were planted by the pioneers of the area. The row of poplars to the west of the wharf on the foreshore was planted by the Maguire family and defined an area called Maguire's Grove. It was Salmon Arm's first city park and contained a cricket patch, a tennis court, and a ball diamond. Another set of heritage trees is on Peter Street, a small little lane a block long next to the United Church. The Bedford family planted many of the trees on the street, and it is a cool, shady haven on a hot Shuswap summer day.
Hello, my name is Dorothy Rowlin, and my story is about saving heritage in Salmon Arm. The preservation of historic buildings is a one-way street. There's no chance to renovate or to save a historic site once it's gone. And we can never be certain what will be valued in the future. This reality brings to light the importance of locating and saving buildings of historic significance. Because once a piece of history is destroyed, it is lost forever. A quote from an American Heritage site. Del Cuscia, a historical treasure. Autumn shone its brilliance as sunshine caught gold, red, and green leaves on the row of remaining trees that once surrounded the beloved Del Cuscia. This was the second time since July 1st I allowed myself to drive slowly past the now empty brown earth site, where the house, also known as former restaurants, the Orchard House, Minos, and briefly the Chop House, once stood. I wondered about bygone years, of how each of the many families who had lived on this property had embraced this beautiful spot, particularly as the four seasons came and went. But let's go back in time to the beginning of history. Colonel Bernard Scott, his wife Margaret, and two children arrived first in Victoria and then made their way to Salmon Arm in 1912, where they purchased land with an orchard. This property was formerly owned by Charles McVicar, then A.D. Meeks, before Colonel Bernard Scott purchased approximately 20 acres of it on Old Enderby Road. The Scots then had their home built in British India colonial style, a design they'd been used to and loved when they lived some 20 years in India. No doubt the style was adapted to accommodate the rugged winters experienced in the Shuswap. The Scots returned to India, where the colonel completed his military service in the British Imperial Army, after which they returned to Salmon Arm. But when World War I broke out, Colonel Scott left to serve in the British Imperial Army, returning to his orchard at the end of hostilities. Some of the apple trees on the Scott orchard were planted by McVicar as early as 1898, but were gradually replaced until the Scott holding became one of the best Macintosh blocks in the district. The Scots had three children, all born in India. Their firstborn, Helen, was born in 1894 in Madras, now Chennai, and died in Bengal at the age of two. Nigel was their second child, born in Bengal, now Bangladesh, in 1898. Then Kenneth arrived in 1899, born in Madras. When they left India in the early 1900s, it is thought they went back to England for a short time to be with family before immigrating to Canada. They assumed care of the Salmon Arm orchard and other fruit trees that came with the land they had purchased, and in 1916, Colonel Scott began to advocate for varieties of apples that were profitable. His son Nigel enlisted in the British Army in 1916 at the age of 18. The colonel experimented with sideline crops such as rhubarb, raspberries, and tulips. With his many contacts in the old country, Colonel Scott, who had various roles on the Board of Trade and Fruit Growers Association from 1922 until 1926, campaigned vigorously to develop an overseas market for BC apples, even though his health was poor. He later resigned from the active role. Colonel Scott spent 13 years developing a labor-intensive bulb nursery, experimenting, growing, and selling, to have the ultimate means by which an orchardist can offset the bad years in his main crop, mainly apples. In 1928, he began to grow tulips for the market. The Scots bestowed the name Del Cuscia on their house and grounds. Del Cuscia means my heart is happy, and is the name of a garden palace in Bangladesh, where their son Nigel was born. It seems very clear that the Scots had an enduring love for India, for the years they lived there, and where their baby daughter was buried. For the next 6 years, the property was ablaze with 500,000 blooms. Tulips were shipped as cut flowers as far away as Ontario and Montreal, in cardboard crates that Colonel Scott ordered, made to his specifications. The local newspaper, The Observer, printed accolades each year describing the 3 acres of close to 500,000 tulips as luxuriant and a site of dazzling splendor. They said people came from far and wide to visit this sea of color. The land sloped towards Shuswap Lake, giving one a panoramic view of floral and fauna. Unfortunately, the colonel's health had deteriorated over the years, and he was confined to his bed and could no longer work amongst his beloved field of tulips. He died in 1932, and there is a marker in Mount Ida Cemetery in his memory. His wife, Margaret, traveled back occasionally to England after his death, until she left Salmon Arm for good in 1945, when she decided to retire in England. Their son, Nigel, assumed responsibility for the orchard after his father's death, after returning from military service. There is documentation of a trip he made to El Paso, Texas, for 3 weeks in November 1935. His profession was fruit grower, and he was married to Alice Mary Rivette Carnac at the time. They later divorced. Nigel left Delcucia and Salmon Arm when World War II broke out to serve in the British Army, and he did not return to Delcucia on a permanent basis. He remarried Catherine Dawes in England in 1946. Bernard Scott's widow, Margaret Elsie Scott, paid taxes on 19.5 acres until 1946. She died in 1947, and her ashes were sent home to Salmon Arm to be interred in her husband's grave. Nigel Scott died in Nanaimo in 1983, survived by Catherine. The next owner was C.R. Barlow, a district field inspector. After him, Dorothy Bennett. Her maiden name was Dorothy Ruth. And her husband, Stafford Bennett, bought the Delcucia property, likely from C.R. Barlow. Some other owners were Lillian Ruth and husband Don, who bought the property from the Bennetts in the 1960s and rented the house out. There was an in-between owner named Herb Anderson, a minister with the Church of Christ, who also was an entrepreneur. Dean Biggs, still one of the later owners, came to the December 20th, 2016 City Community Heritage Commission meeting and spoke of the many renovations he and his wife Lou did to restore the old house. He also showed lovely photos of the finished interior of the house when they lived there. Brenda and Cindy Bell were the next owners, and their vision of Delcucia was a restaurant. First record of the name Orchard House was noted in 1983, advertised as a special place to dine. It operated until purchased by Ian and Shirley Williams in 1990. They operated the Orchard House until 1996-97. In 1998, it became Mino's Greek House until 2013. The restaurant was then leased to a couple from Calgary, who reopened it as the Heritage Chop House, and after a short span of a year or so, closed for renovations. It never reopened, and the restaurant became derelict, sitting empty until 2017. In 2015, the property was put up for sale. The City of Salmon Arm eventually purchased it in 2016, with the intent of adding it to their adjoining 2 acres, into which they could extend their aquatic facilities sometime in the future. Letters of protest were sent to City Hall and published in the newspapers when the city let it be known that this well-known house-slash-restaurant was going to be demolished. On December 20th, 2016, a group of concerned citizens, including the Okanagan Historical Society president, met at a Community Heritage Commission meeting to express their protests and concerns over the threat of loss of a heritage house. As a result, the mayor and council gave them 3 months to come up with a solid business plan to save Delcucia and to present back to them. The concerned citizens formed a group called Preserving Delcucia Group and met nearly every week until the March deadline. Petitions were circulated, phone calls and letters to clubs and citizens who might support this cause for preserving Salmon Arm's heritage were sent out. In the end, the city's own Heritage Commission did a study that voted Delcucia be recognized on the Heritage Register. Not one counselor or the mayor would recognize any of the gathered information they demanded of the Preserving Del Cuscia group, or acknowledge their own commission's recommendation. Del Cuscia met her fate in July of 2017. One can ignore and not endorse the history of bygone years, but history lives on regardless. Del Cuscia, gone, but not forgotten.
One of the enjoyable parts of spending time at a backcountry lodge is chatting with the other skiers from around the country and the world. During one trip, a businessman from Vancouver asked me about Salmon Arm because some of his friends are thinking of retiring here soon. I asked him, what are the reasons his friends have for planning to move here? There was, of course, the obvious. Our huge, clean, warm lake, and the other two are the great music scene and the bike trails. Contrary to what some locals believe, however, shopping opportunities are clearly not part of their decision-making. Just what makes our Shuswap region so unique and special? Certainly the size, shape, location, and water quality of Shuswap Lake is one attribute that cannot be found in many other parts of North America or even the world. The diversity of the lake itself, with so much of its shoreline in a natural, uninhabited state, is a rarity. And a sizable part of the lake in Anstey Arm is permanently protected as a provincial park that also includes Hunnequal Lake, which is quite likely the largest unroded protected wilderness lake in the interior of North America at a low elevation. Another aspect of the Shuswap that makes the region quite unique is its diversity. There are not many other areas in the province that contain so many different ecosystems, from the dry ponderosa pine and bunch grass landscapes close to Falkland and Chase, to the interior rainforests of the Upper Adams and Seymour, to the rich Shuswap River and Salmon River Valley farmlands. The Shuswap has it all. And in some locations, this diversity can be a mere hundreds of meters apart, from a dry pine-treed hillside to a creek canyon where there are cedar and hemlock trees. Another quality that sets the Shuswap apart is its First Nation heritage, as so many of our place names originate from the Sewetmik peoples. As well, the local First Nation bands, despite having endured over 150 years of injustice, are thriving. Their cultural heritage and language are being revived, and their economies are improving, unlike many other areas of North America where First Nation communities have either disappeared or are struggling. As the soon-to-be-retiring Vancouver boomers know, the Shuswap has a plethora of uniquely diverse recreational opportunities. While the focus up until the last decade has been on the motorized sector, from houseboats to speedboats, jet skis, snowmobiles, and motorbikes, the more environmentally friendly options are gaining traction, thanks to the rapidly growing legion of trail enthusiasts led by the Shuswap Trail Alliance. The network of bike and hiking trails is improving yearly. One of the Shuswap's most enduring unique qualities is our culture, as despite our relatively small population, we are home to one of the premier musical events in Canada, the Roots and Blues Festival. Throughout the rest of the year, there are a growing number of coffee houses in surrounding communities where highly talented local musicians play to full audiences. And there are the Salmon Arm Art Gallery, Saga Jazz Nights, the Summer Music Nights at the Wharf, and the very popular annual student music festivals. In addition to all the fabulous music, we have wonderful live theater and so many creative artists that are able to show their work in a splendid heritage building thanks to so much community support. It is the amazing level of community spirit that also makes the Shuswap so special. From our very active community halls to the large number of volunteers for the festivals, to the Shuswap Foundation that helps support a wide variety of local nonprofit organizations. Perhaps one of the Shuswap's most unique cultural features is the Salmar Community Association, which is one of only a few in Canada, and it's likely the oldest and is the only one with two facilities and five movie screens. And since the association was established over 70 years ago, it has raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for community projects and scholarships. Certainly one feature that sets the Shuswap apart from the Okanagan is its relatively small population, which means few crowds, no traffic jams, and a better chance of enjoying more peace and solitude in nature. What sets this apart from the Kootenays is that there is more sunshine, warmer lakes to swim in, better opportunities for gardening, and we are closer to larger centers. However, there are more parks and more opportunities for skiing in the Kootenays. Another attribute not normally considered is the amount of backcountry we have. If you study a map of the Shuswap, you can see how there's so few highways and communities while most of the land base is crown land. Certainly there are logging roads throughout much of the land base and associated cutbacks and plantations, but there are virtually no people. There are still many areas left that have yet to see a human footprint, such as many creek canyons and in many of the mountains. As for recreation, the large hills certainly deserve mention, as this is one of the largest, best-maintained Nordic ski areas in the province. Plus, it is one of the few areas where a person can ski without having to purchase a day pass, as only a donation is requested. Recently, a network of snowshoe trails has been added that provide more opportunities for those who do not ski, and this area is becoming increasingly popular for mountain biking and hiking in the summer. As for culture, the Shuswap is fortunate to have a very active film society that is one of the oldest and most successful in Canada. There are weekly shows except in the summer, which include both foreign and Canadian art films. Plus, there are two film festivals a year that draw large crowds. While most of the wildlife found in the Shuswap can be found elsewhere, we are fortunate to have one of the world's few breeding sites for the western grebe in Salmon Arm Bay. A portion of this bay has been protected, and there's a very active group, the Salmon Arm Bay Nature Enhancement Society, that provides interpretive services and looks after the popular lakeside trails. This area has become a mecca for birdwatchers, a pastime growing in popularity, especially for the boomer generation. And while there is no shortage of wineries in Okanagan, there are a growing number now in the Shuswap. What makes these wineries unique is that the grapes are being grown farther north than anywhere else in North America. The Granite Creek Winery did hold a distinction of being the most northern, but now the Solista Estate Winery in the North Shuswap holds this distinction. You can learn more from shuswapwineries.ca to find out about grape growing and wine in the Shuswap. Given all the Shuswap has to offer, from its magnificent vistas to its thriving culture, it is no wonder that so many boomers want to retire here.
My name is Dorothy Rolin. I'm the current president of the Salmon Arm branch of the Okanagan Historical Society. If you have stories or memories you'd like to share with this program, please call Voice of the Shuswap at 250-463-5026 or email info@voiceoftheshuswap.ca. Discovering and sharing Shuswap history.
This radio program was made possible by a Government of Canada New Horizons grant, helping celebrate Canada's 150th anniversary.